Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Are you afraid? You should be.
I thought he was the man to lead us through the long night.
A face will be added to the whole.
You would spill blood in this holy place.
The gods won't mind.
Show them what Lannisters are.
And make no mistake. The dead are coming. Dragons do not do well in captivity.
How do you know this?
That's what I do. I drink and I know things.
They have no idea what's going to happen.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, to the Winter is Coming Game of Thrones podcast. This is Take the Black, and I'm your host, Razor, and I'm here with the usual suspects, Isis, Corey Phone, Corey Smith, and Annie Bundle, and we're here to talk everything about Game of Thrones Episode 7, The Broken Man. And boy, what an episode it was. Even though it was a transitional episode, it was a spectacular episode because we had the return of Sandor Clegane, the Hound. And I'm not really sure because I haven't done the research on this, but we had a cold open, guys.
We did.
Annie, how many cold opens have we had in Game of Thrones?
Not many, and they almost always do it when they're bringing somebody back who they don't want to give away in the credits. So basically they did it because, you know, it's not going to be effective if you see Rory's name in the credits and then there he is. So that's why they cold opened it.
And you and I knew that he was coming back way back right at the end of season 5 because he was spotted in Belfast.
That's correct.
When we were looking for Kit Harington because Hair Watch 2015 and 16.
You know, it was funny because I saw a lot of people, like, the fact of the matter is like a lot of the cast hangs out in Belfast. Some of them live in Belfast, especially like the kids. So like Shireen was hanging around, and the girl who played Cersei's daughter before she was Cersei's daughter, back before she hit puberty. So like, you know, it felt like there was a reunion of the dead going around like on a regular basis. So, there was a possibility that Rory McCann was just hanging in Belfast, but we had a pretty good idea that the answer was no. Well, I don't think what I expected was that he would be basically his own, like, show within a show when he finally turned up.
Yeah, I was not expecting for him to take up so much time. Like, but then we had Ian McShane pretty much give away everything in a BBC radio interview.
Yeah, but he didn't give away the fact that they were going to be by themselves. Like, he didn't actually give away the fact that they were their own little, like, island of a show within a show. You know, it's funny because it really felt like, in a lot of ways, the play within a play that we've seen Arya be part of the last couple of weeks, which is a bunch of really big-named actors being stunt cast in these tiny little roles that they're kind of, like, off in their own little world away from the rest of the show. And this, again, felt like very much stunt casting in a small little, you know, the Hound's life. You know,
So weird.
You know,
so surreal.
Hound's life. This is like a little spinoff that's happening. In a different world where the grass is still green and winter hasn't come yet. And, you know, and we stunt Kathy and McShane because, you know, of course we can. Why wouldn't we? So, yeah, it very much felt of a piece in that sense. It felt like a kind of an echo of that.
I love Ian McShane so much. And Corey Thone, I know you're a huge fan of Deadwood. And I saw your tweet last night. Actually, I saw it this morning because I wasn't on Twitter last night, but I saw it this morning where it was like, fucking confirmed, Clegane Bowl.
Yeah.
You seemed very excited about that, but I was reading Ian McShane's interview today, and he was like, yeah, they brought me on because I'm really good about giving these big, long speeches.
I mean,
hey, I love Ian McShane. He's just my guy. And yeah, of course, he has to give these big, long diatribe speeches type things where he did it all the time on Deadwood, so why not bring him on Game of Thrones for a one-off?
Yeah.
Where he talks about these a convoluted type broken man speech where he's given a sermon.
Well, I think that there's a lot of, and Annie said this, there's a lot of weight that Ian McShane carries with him for, I would say, people that are a fan of Game of Thrones probably are familiar somewhat with Ian McShane. And,
oh, of course.
And even on shows that didn't work, like NBC's Kings that he was on, which is one of my favorite shows that got canceled one season. He brings so much gravitas to it, and he's such a recognizable name and voice. And the first thing that popped into my head, because I think the gold standard for me, it's probably because I was like 11 when the movie came out, but the first Mission Impossible with Tom Cruise, Emilio Estevez was the second or third biggest stand-up movie, depending on how big you think John Voight was in the 90s. Like, Tom Cruise is obviously number one, and then it's like, with John Voight and Emilio Estevez, man, if it was going to be awesome, they killed Emilio Estevez in the first, like, 6 minutes.
And didn't the elevator crush him or something?
Yeah, well, he got stabbed through the throat by the elevator or whatever. Like, it went down his mouth. It was all messed up. And it stuck with me forever. It's like, that was a bold move to take one of the people that he was, Gordon Bombay, and killing him. And, like, that's kind of, I think, as funny as the Bombay joke is, taking Ian McShane, bringing him for one episode, showing the impact that he had on the Hound and on those people, and then killing all of them, including Ian McShane. That adds, if you'd have had a face, not faceless, but a nameless actor that you really didn't know, that the world doesn't really know, it wouldn't have had the emphasis, I think, that Ian McShane had being killed after one episode. So I think it was a really good cast.
Right, right. So, Corey Smith, let me ask you this. Two questions. With now that we've got Sandor Clegane back on the show, and with the hanging of Septon Rhaegar, which should have been the Silent Brother melded with Septon Maribald, but so they called him Rhaegar. I don't really know what's going on with that. But
Septon Maribald was copyrighted.
Yeah, I guess so. Is this
Steve?
Are we looking at a two-parter here? Are we looking at Lady Stoneheart fucking confirmed, and or are we looking at Clegane Bowl fucking confirmed?
You know, I swear my phone was blowing up today, everybody asking about Lady Stoneheart. I still, and be ready to scream, I still don't see her showing up on the show.
You are not a truther?
I'm not a truther. I mean, I think that it could make sense now that, you know, if they were going to do it, I do like the idea of doing it after John is brought back as opposed to before, just because it would have taken away some of the weight of John's resurrection if they were showing people doing it all the time. But I don't see why you would bring her back at this point, like what purpose she would serve this late in the story. And I don't see, you know, how you would do it. I mean, this season you've been bringing back so many people. It's like you start bringing back Catelyn and everybody's going to be like, oh, well, what about so-and-so? What about so-and-so?
Well, the show's already jumping Magic Shark.
Right.
You can forget about, like, it's already jumped the Fantasy Shark. So I wouldn't worry about that. And the how and the why is this. You brought three members of the Brotherhood Without Banners that we've not seen before on the show. You brought in three guys on horseback, and one of them was quite obviously a nod to Lem Lemoncloak.
Right.
On the horse with the yellow cloak.
Is it really his name? Because all that shit rhymes. That's absurd.
That way he wears a cloak and then over time is turned yellow.
Does he speak in rhyme like Tom Bombadil? No,
he's a big dick. He's an asshole.
Lemon cloak with my yellow cloak.
Well, so they call him that, but this guy was an obvious nod to that. And they're obviously worshippers of the Red God.
Right.
So that means they're Brotherhood Without Banners. And they played the Red Woman music as they rode in and rode off. So we know that they're part of the Brotherhood. Roy McCann or the Hound called them Brotherhood Without Banners. Here's the how. I mean, they had a hanging of Septa Maribald, and I was reading a thread on Twitter. Like they were like, why they would bring Lady Stoneheart in now? And it's like, okay, so here's a hanging. We know that Lady Stoneheart hangs her victims. Why would she hang a Septon? Well, the Septon was a broken man. He terrorized the people of the Riverlands before he became a Septon. He killed, he raped, he tortured, he burned.
But now
he stole.
Running Murderers Anonymous. I mean,
I know
fine.
He is. But you gotta understand, Lady Catelyn is now a vengeful revenge zombie.
Yeah.
She doesn't really care. She doesn't really care anymore. And so she could, you know, she sends out her riders and they find these people, and they could have also recognized the Hound amongst these people.
I mean,
they know what the Hound looks like. He's very distinguishable by his burn marks.
Yeah, and
so,
and I would just, I mean, like, I know in the book she becomes this revenge zombie, but she is only killing Freys and Lannisters. She's not running around killing random civilians that are just, you know, making stew and stuff like that. And to the point of, okay, maybe they recognize Sandor Clegane. Well, sure, but if that was the case, you would think they would have stuck around to make sure they got him instead of just killing everybody else. So
I agree.
But the show
always goes off book on a certain point.
That's true, but I just don't see them turning Lady Catelyn into some, you know, person who's running around just randomly killing people. It just doesn't... I mean, what would be the point of that?
You mean like they turn Yara Greyjoy into a full-blown lesbian?
I mean, yeah, but that doesn't...
Yeah, they did.
I mean...
Bang, bang.
Yeah,
of course they did.
But that's changing...
This is,
you know...
HBO. They did that because this is HBO, sir.
I know.
Nobody's
complaining about
that. But I think that, you know, I mean, if you start to change Lady Catelyn's basic motivations, you turn into a villain because that's who she would be if she's just killing these, you know, random women and children. I don't see the point in why would you bring her back to turn her into a villain. We have enough villains.
Before we get off this topic, I do want to point out one thing. At the end of A Dance with Dragons, or if that's her last scene or in Feast, she's about to hang Pod and Brienne, and that's when she becomes a villain because she's willing to hang Pod.
I see, and I disagree there too, because even there she still is justifying as, okay, these people are serving the Lannisters. They serve my enemy.
He's a child. There's really no justification for that.
I'm not saying it's not a stretch, but I mean, there's a difference between that and then killing all the people we saw last night. Is all I'm saying.
Okay.
And so,
okay.
And then, you know, anyways, I still don't see it. If I do end up seeing it, then I'm gonna, you know.
But I want to point out that's not a spoiler because it didn't happen. We were the book cut off before it happened, so we don't know that it actually happened. So I'm just going to put it out there. That's not a spoiler. We don't know that Brienne and Pod were hanged. In fact, Brienne comes out later to grab Jaime for a certain purpose. So
right.
That's not a spoiler. Anyway,
it's up for debate whether or not they were hung beforehand and Brienne is a zombie or if Brienne is alive.
Exactly. Now, Isis, I got to ask you a question, and I've been wanting to talk to you about this. As Septon Rhaegh comes up to the Hound and he's chopping wood fiercely and he's like, how many men did it take to bring you down? And it comes out that it's not actually a man, it's a woman. Did that bring a smile to your face remembering that fight that Brienne kicked the shit out of him?
Absolutely. I love the fact that he could at least admit it, that it was an actual, you know, that it was a woman and that, you know, he admits it. She got the better of him that day and everything. I'm really happy that he is back. I was shocked when they did that cold open, having Ian McShane just for this one-off episode. I mean, I could hear him monologue like all day long, really, I could. And the fact that Corey knew that he was on the TV show Kings and loved it makes me love Corey even that more.
I love you, Isis.
Much more. I love you, Boo. And like when he said, he just mentioned Kings, I was like, holy crap, that's awesome. Because I love that show, because I watched it because Ian McShane was on it.
Yep.
And it was a great show. But, you know, I think that the Hound is now, I think he just needed that episode to kind of bring him back, because he's been gone for so long. But he needed that dynamic actor to, you know, kind of give him the reason to go on, because if it was just a no name, nobody, I don't think he would have been able to, you know, kind of get under his skin and really kind of get him thinking, because he was just happy just cutting wood there and not doing anything. He didn't want to become involved at all. But now he has to become involved.
He seemed resigned to a life of peace at that point.
He did. He was just like, I'm just going to live out my days doing this and, you know, being useful, but not, you know, to
Corey, you don't think
and...
so.
Did you see how that dude was chopping wood? He is pissed.
He's working out some issues.
I'm saying he's working some shit out, okay?
Yeah, no,
I'm not
I
saying
agree.
That he's not...
Are we really going to sit here and think that the Hound was ever going to, like, just live his days out?
Maybe he was telling himself that for a little while, that, like, no, he was really
sure.
Done. He was, you know, he went through some really nasty crap, you know, both
yeah,
from
no,
the
I
Lannisters
agree with that.
And everything else. And, you know, this way he keeps himself from his brother, he's away from everything. You know, it might be nice for him to have this life. Of course, it's not going to last, but, you know, for a little while he can pretend to himself.
Well, I think I'm sorry, Razor, but it's interesting if you look at his arc post-leaving at the Battle of Blackwater. And what we've seen of him and what he's become from being the guy that was like, anybody with a sword without blood on it, I'll kill him myself, whatever he said. Like, from that guy to the almost, like, awesome, fun, like the duo with him and Arya, to the fight with, the very humbling fight with Brienne, to now working as basically a hand. Even though we saw him carrying a log by himself, he's still the Hound. Like, he has a limp.
Dude is crazy.
He's still
strong.
Crazy strong. Like, we've seen that he's still that guy, and he still has that rage inside of him, but he's doing his best. I think that a lot of that came from the humbling of Brienne and also hanging out with Arya to learn again that, like, hey, so everything up until – it's a very Will Hunting moment. Everything up to this point was not my fault. And now it's like I'm trying to do the right thing. I'm trying to be good. But, I mean, come on. When it's all said and done, and I think he knew it in his heart of hearts, he swings an axe and he swings a sword, and that's who he is. But now he can do that, maybe not for good, but not for evil. And hey, that's a step in the right direction, right? So
what you're basically saying is, despite all his rage,
oh, for heaven's sakes,
he's still just
a rat in a cage.
He's a hound in a cage. Exactly what he is.
You all are fired back in 1997.
All right, let's get over to King's Landing, where we saw the Queen of the Seven Kingdoms, and yes, she is the Queen, Margaery, reading piously from the seven-pointed star, or whatever it's called, and the Sparrow comes in. Now, we all thought she was the puppet of the Sparrow for a little bit, but apparently, he's her puppet. She's running game on him.
You know, I think they're each other's puppet. I mean, seriously,
yeah.
He was standing there warning her that that they were coming after her grandmother next. If she didn't
behave, and
if she didn't get her grandmother to behave.
And what did she do? She warned her grandmother.
That's true, she did.
I think that the High Sparrow wanted Olenna out of the city.
That could be true.
I think that's exactly what he was going for. I mean, because otherwise he wouldn't care. If he was going to grab her and put her in jail, he wouldn't have told Margaery. I think he wanted her to think that she was in danger. He wanted her out of the city. I think the High Sparrow knows that she's probably the smartest person in the city other than him.
Yeah.
So get him out of the way and let Cersei and Mace Tyrell run everything straight into the ground.
Regular size Rudy is right.
Yeah.
But Isis, I have to ask you this. Is it indeed Margaery's duty to give up that booty?
No, it is not her duty to give up that booty, okay? I don't care what the High Sparrow says. And I can understand why she's not giving up that booty. I mean, she was in jail for a long time. She was locked up for a very, very long time. And so I wouldn't be very inclined to be giving up the booty either to my husband, who, you know, unfortunately he is a child. Let's call it what he is. He is a child. So I thought it was just funny that he was giving relationship advice, but I didn't necessarily agree with it. I was just like, excuse me.
I like that he's like, Congress for women is not necessarily about desire. Okay.
It's patience.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I relate that to, like, you know, when Catholics, before they get married, they have to go through, like, marriage training and stuff like that. That conversation was, like, very similar to that very uncomfortable position that you're talking to your priest about premarital sex. So it was just really weird and really creepy.
It wasn't the only time in this episode, though, and I know I'm jumping around a little bit, that we really got into the idea that, like, hey, at least Highborn, your love life is not really yours. It's not something you can control, because with the really pissed off guy that Sansa argued with, I can't remember names.
Glover.
Yeah, the Glovers, like, they made it very clear that what Rob did, they didn't agree with, and that's the reason that the Boltons are in power and everything else. And it's like, for us watching it now, it's like, okay, well, Rob really liked that girl whose name I forget, like, more than just physically. But it's also very clear that Rob was very much about, like, wanting a hot wife. But, like, it was more than physical. He, like, enjoyed being with her as a person. And that was not – that was a problem, because he had an oath to keep with Marjorie and everything else, the High Sparrow being like, this is your duty. It's like that's – they really nailed home, I think, in this episode, how much Highborn duty, if you will, like, plays into people's –
You said
it's a duty. How much their marriages and stuff, like, we've talked about this, you're a Snow, not a Stark, and you're not a Stark, you're a Bolton, or is it a Lannister? We're not really sure at this point. And everything else, they really hit home this episode that, like, marriages and stuff in the Highborn society is a big deal. So I don't know. I thought it was interesting. I disagree with what he said, just like Isis, because I would never agree with what he said, especially not with Isis on the same call as me. But but I just think that there was, in more than one scene, this episode in particular, they really kind of put that in your head that, like, hey, this whole thing is messed up. So,
Annie, if you were Marjorie, could you sexually perform with Septa Unella in the same room watching you?
Close your eyes and think of England. Close your eyes and think of Westeros. I mean, I suppose. You know, what struck me more than anything, though? Okay, so he's sitting there telling Marjorie, you need to breed because you need to baby. Basically, you remember how, like, she was trying to get a baby in her belly when she was married to, when she was
Renly,
and Renly, like, you know, she's like, look, we'll put Loras in the bed, whatever it takes to get you hard, right? Seriously. But it's basically the same thing. We need to put a baby in your belly because if something happens to Tommen, we need this line to be, you know, we need this line to be secure. And that
total foreshadowing, by the way.
But here's the thing, right? Yes, of course, Tommen's going to die by the end of the year. But that's neither here nor there. What is here or there is the fact that Cersei's trial is coming up. Mm-hmm. If Cersei is found guilty of incest with Jaime and her children are all declared illegitimate, that makes Tommen illegitimate.
And makes his
and that takes away a king that the High Sparrow has as a playing piece. It is not in the High Sparrow's interest to find Cersei guilty. If he is trying to basically get Marjorie to have the next in line with Tommen, this would derail his whole plan. So yeah,
who becomes the king after this? Who's the rightful heir?
Okay, if Tommen dies and there's a baby in Marjorie's belly, then the baby, when it's born, if it's a boy, if it's a girl, I think there's still, like, if it's a girl, it's not. If it's a boy, then it's their child that inherits.
No, I'm saying if Tommen's declared a bastard.
Oh, if Tommen's declared a bastard, ooh, that's a problem. Because the answer, well, then, would have been...
Annie, the answer is obvious, until we have a time to be able to determine who should be king. I, the High Sparrow, will sit on the throne and make all the calls.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that's very good. You know, though I don't...
Gendry.
Yeah. No, Gendry's a bastard. He can't.
That's true.
No. Baratheons are all dead. There really isn't one.
I remember someone breaking this down, and it's like it was someone from House Martell.
Is it someone from House Martell? Because
I mean, in the books, I mean, on the show, who the hell knows? But in the books, someone went back like 9 generations and found a distant cousin's relation.
It would have to be because they intermarried with Targaryens several generations back.
Right.
So that would be the answer then.
There. Yeah,
That would have to be the answer.
I didn't think that a Game of Thrones podcast could get nerdier, but here we are, talking lineage. Good stuff, guys.
It was a long, long, long article that you had to read through to finally get to the point. But it was pretty good, anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Who was that wrote that on our site? Somebody wrote that on our site. I forget who wrote that. Anyway, moving along. Yeah, so what did you have to say, Isis? You wanted to chime in with something.
Never mind. It's all good.
Rock, rock. Okay, so anyway, we saw Margaery talk to her grandmother, and at first it seemed like she was going to play the pious queen once again, but then she passed her a warning in the form of a rose, which meant that Margaery really wasn't the High Sparrow's puppet. She was actually acting on the behest of her grandmother, which was get the hell out of King's Landing as fast as possible. Now, that still leaves a problem for Loras. I am severely and sincerely worried about Loras. I don't know what's going to happen with poor Loras. In the books, he's one of my favorite characters. He's gallant. He's a knight. He's a badass. He's not this vapid weakling that he is on the show. I really want him to come out of this, but I don't have any hope for him. I don't think he's going to come out of this doing very well at all. I think he's going to be scarred or dead by the end of the season. So hopefully something happens that. I mean, we've seen him do an interview in the behind-the-scenes video where his head has been shaved, and he's wearing potato sack clothes. He looks like he's already become a penitent, so maybe he does choose the life of a sparrow. I hope not, but something tells me that Loras is not going to come out on the good end of things. But it looks like Lady Olenna is going to make her way back to Highgarden. And I like the fact that she told Cersei off. Like, at first I kind of felt bad for Cersei, and I know, Isis, you don't feel bad for Cersei at all. But
I was cheering for Lady Olenna. She was giving her the business, and I loved every second of it. She was telling her everything that we want to say.
I don't know what it is. I kind of feel bad for Cersei right now.
Why?
Like, she's
Cersei
coming...
was there literally trying to play the game again. I mean, was there trying to use all the same lines. We have to work together. And Olenna was like, girl, you lost.
Yeah, I understand that. I do. And maybe it's just the writing of the show is so good, I just started to feel bad for Cersei again. And I don't want to feel bad for Cersei, but I just started to feel bad for her. Like she's reaching out for a companion. She's reaching out for a... whatever, and I know she's playing the game. I know deep down she's a dirty trickster, but whatever. Anyway, she has the mountain, and we saw the trailer for next episode. The mountain's going to squash a bunch of sparrows.
Oh, I can't wait.
I can't wait to see that. But let's leave King's Landing and let's go ahead.
Wait, I didn't get to make my joke, actually.
Oh, let me hear your joke.
Because I thought of this last night, and I didn't tweet it. I saved it for now. So she gives the rose to Olenna, I already say her name, and
Olenna.
And all I could think of was that there used to be a Tyrell Tower alone on the sea, but you remain in King's Landing on the dark side of me.
Oh, Jesus. You're fired. All of you, right back to the
I'm not.
Again. Stay there.
Yes,
I am not drunk enough for this podcast right now.
Yes,
I am.
I am clearly not.
That's 2 90s songs.
Listen, I'm just saying that we all think Loras is gay, but maybe he just loves girls that wear Abercrombie and Fitch. So, I don't
know. Oh, my God.
Anyway, moving on.
Oh, my God. Dude, I love you so much for that, by the way.
Thank Leanne for this, by the way, for making those blueberry marks.
Oh, man, that's amazing what you just did. Okay. Now we get to talk about my favorite part of the show, and probably what everybody else's favorite parts were. And that is, well, we have to start at the wildling part, but it's John's talking. John and Tormund and Sansa and Davos, they're all trying to recruit people for their attack on Winterfell, and they start with the wildlings. And, of course, the wildlings are hesitant, and they have the bulk of Jon's army. They make up the bulk of Jon's army, 2,000 men. And, of course, along with these 2,000 men comes a giant. You know, it's kind of like the Avengers. We have a Hulk. They have a 1-1, right? So if they can get the wildlings on their side, and they can get a giant on their side, I can imagine that they can sway the battle pretty heavily in their favor. You know, I'm not sure numbers-wise how that sways, but 1-1 can take out probably a good couple of hundred men if he gets a tree in his hands and just starts swinging like a bat.
Yeah, but you see, there's a problem. They got the wildlings, but that means that none of the northerners want to join them now because they're all racist idiots like Tarly.
That's true. That is true. But Corey Smith, let me ask you this. Like Annie's saying, is the main problem the fact that the northerners are super racist against the wildlings? We do see houses joining them. There are a few houses joining Jon. We have Mormont. And a couple other houses, I have it written down here somewhere, but we have a couple other houses joining. And there is rumors that Manderly might join Jon. I hope we see Manderly join Jon in episode 9. What do you think? Do you think we're going to see any more houses join Jon in his cause?
I think we'll get a couple more. I think they'll probably be the smaller houses. I think there's definitely the racism factor, but I think also they're probably just tired of fighting. You know, I mean, they had the bulk of their men went down south with Rob. The ones that stayed behind got slaughtered by the Ironborn when they invaded. So, I mean, I think that, like, if all things being equal, they would probably overlook the fact that they're wildlings. But because they kind of just been screwed around for the past 3 or 4 years, they really just are kind of tired of it.
Well, you know, the specter of Rob's failure really did hang over everything this week.
And you don't realize how much it does until you start listening to everybody bitch about it.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, the thing is, you know, we kind of forget, you know, that how badly Rob's war went and how stupidly he screwed it up by being his father's son, basically, and insisting, you know, the fact of the matter is that Talisa, she always annoyed me as a character because Jane Westerling, who is the woman he marries in the books, was a dumb highborn lady who assumed that she would be married to someone of Rob's rank, you know,
right.
Whereas, you know, in on the TV show, this one just seemed so much more sensible. Like, she would understand, no, he has a duty and he has to go marry this other girl because he promised. But I could be his mistress and it'll be totally cool. Like, she, you know, like, she would have been fine with that. And he wouldn't hear of it because he was too stupidly honorable. And he basically lost his entire war because he couldn't take a woman as his mistress. He had to take her as his wife.
Well, see, that's the difference. That's the difference between Rob and Ned. Is that Rob's honor was based off what he thought was honorable, and Ned's honor was based off what others thought was honorable. Ned always thought, what are other people going to think? That's why he lied about Hal and Reed. That's why he possibly lied about John's birth, right? Rob is the one that, like, I know what's honorable. I love this woman. I'm not going to – it's like, that's bullshit. It doesn't work like that. in the Highborn. Again, we get into that. But on the flip side, Rob has a dope-ass wolf head now. So, you know.
In his grave.
Well, but he looks fly as hell in that grave, son. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
I love that. No, but you know what the problem with Rob was? And here's what you make a good point, Annie, is not too many people think about the failures of Rob until it's brought up on the show, is because he won every battle he fought in. He was undefeated. He had the support of the entire North.
He won it on the battlefield and lost in the bedroom.
Yeah, he basically.
Story of my life.
Story. And his biggest problem was his damnable honor. And he got to the fray. He got to the Twins. He made the mistake of locking up his direwolf and not letting Grey Wind come into the wedding feast with him, even though his mother said, "Don't lock up your direwolf. Don't trust the phrase."
Hey, you know, I do have a thought though that just occurred to me. You know, what if John and Bran and Rob had known the truth about their father and hadn't seen him as this honorable figure who was basically like larger than life? Because you know, Bran had it brought home to him the other week at the Tower of Joy. That, oh, he stabbed him in the back. Whoa, you know, that's not how I was told the story. What if they had actually been told the truth about some of Ned's things that he'd kept from them? What if they knew that he wasn't really the honorable, the pagan of honor that they mistook him for? You know,
well, see,
I think
they'd
been better off.
I think Ned was a completely honorable person. If he'd have just told the truth, it'd have been even better in their eyes. Like, yeah, I'm not really John's father. But I took him in anyway.
Yeah, but he couldn't. He couldn't tell the truth about
exactly.
That.
No, because if Robert Baratheon ever knew that man was... Robert Baratheon ever knew...
But I'm sure his family would have kept that secret, though. Well, maybe
no.
Sansa would.
Yeah, no, Sansa would open her mouth, and that would have been the end.
She's a vapid little airhead.
Oh, my God, that poor... And you know what? Watching Sansa try to talk to Lyanna Mormont, "You're so pretty, fuck you." I mean, that was...
that was actually hilarious.
Which brings me to my next topic. Let's talk about House Mormont. First of all, Corey, I want to ask Corey Smith. Let me ask you this. This is our first look at Bear Island on the show. How were you taken in by the beauty of it?
Yeah, I mean, Bear Island looks like probably the coolest place we've seen in all of Westeros so far. I was like, dang, I want to go retire there. That looks like a badass.
It was amazing,
yeah.
Right? Like, I kind of pictured Bear Island as this surrounded by huge, tall bears, like a bunch of bears, and huge, tall, like cedars or whatever, and like a big, huge hunting lodge for their castle.
Yeah, that's all.
And here we are. Here we are looking at this goddamn picturesque waterfall island. I mean, it was just beautiful.
Yeah, it looked like a Swedish retreat for, like, you know, some .com millionaire, you know?
Westeros .com millionaires.
Yeah, exactly.
And then we get in, and unlike Annie was expecting an older Mormont, I was expecting the younger Mormont, and I was happy with little Lyanna. I was expecting a firecracker, and I got exactly what I wanted, because last season, when she sent that letter to Stannis, I actually was clapping. I was audibly clapping because I knew exactly what was coming. I was very happy for it. And then when she shows up on screen, she was bigger than life. Like, she far out exceeded my expectations. So, Isis, let me ask you this. What was your impression of little Lyanna the firecracker Mormont?
Well, at first I was kind of confused because I was like, who's this little girl, you know, sitting in this chair? And I was just like kind of confused. I was like, oh, shit, she's running things in this place. And then when she started talking, I was like, she's everything we want Sansa to be. But Sansa can never be her. Like, it was just – she was just amazing. She was strong. She was, you know, very self-assured. It was just – it was so amazing to see this young girl play this a very strong part. It almost made you forget how young she was. If you had closed your eyes and just listened to her talk, you would have thought she was a woman, you know, of some more years on her. But when you look at her, you're just like, holy crap, the visual and the audibles didn't reconcile. So I thought it was really interesting what she had to say. I'm not going to lie. I was like, when she said 62 men, I was like 62,000. I was like, is that what she means? Like 62,000? Like, I don't know. And then he was like, no, like 62, and they're, twice as strong, and blah, blah, blah. I was like, oh, God, this was a waste of fucking time. 10 times as strong. I was like, still, that's a waste of freaking time. Go ahead.
No, you go, because mine's a joke, so you go ahead.
I didn't think it was a waste of time. I think that they have to build, and like they were saying, they got to build small, and I think that it's one of those things where it's like, you win the endorsement of, the teachers union, and then you win the endorsement of, one thing at a time.
So Jon Snow is Bernie Sanders? What is this?
No, something like that. Jon Snow, Leanna Mormont 2016. I am all about that. Okay.
Well, here's the thing. 62 Bear Island guys. All you have to do is find 62 blonde women, and then you have them be totally dedicated to them, and then they just follow – you just send them into the castle. They follow them into the castle, and they take it because they won't be stopped from getting that dragon poon, man. Like, Mormonts are the most friend-zoned. It would be amazing. That's all you have to do. You know their strength.
There's Daenerys. Everybody get her.
The whole 62 crazy men – run after the it's exactly what would happen. You got it, man.
I just felt like that.
Go ahead, Isis. What were you saying?
No, go ahead.
Well, that's the reason Leanna Mormont is so badass. She's the matriarch of her family because, first of all, her mother and her aunts went away to Robb's War, and on the show they died. In the books, her mother or her aunt survived because Robb sent her away with a letter that legitimizes Jon Snow. In the books, Robb legitimizes Jon Snow and makes him a Stark in case he died. Robb said, in case I die, I want to legitimize Jon as a Stark, and this letter proves it, and he sends Madge Mormont, I believe is her name, off with a letter to Howland Reed. Go through Howland Reed. I want this letter to be legitimized. So she survives the war. But Leanna Mormont stays at Bear Island. And then, of course, her uncle Jorah Mormont is the Lord Commander of the Night's Watch. He's killed at Craster's Keep in the mutiny. Her cousin Jorah had to flee Westeros because he sold slaves, and that's a punishable offense, and Eddard Stark was coming to punish him by probably beheading him, so he fled Westeros and went to Essos. And
which is why Jorah is at Castle Black in his place.
Yeah, which is why Jorah came to Castle Black to take the Black in his son's place.
Which is why Jon got
Longclaw. Jon got Longclaw because it used to be House Mormont's Valyrian Steel Sword, but because Jorah disgraced House Mormont, Jor Mormont gave it to Jon because he saved his life.
Are we misremembering,
Corey? I thought they made it clear in the books that Jorah was Lord of Bear Island when he did the whole thing with the slavers, sold the poachers.
You may be right.
He may be crazy.
Yeah. A little of both.
You may be right. I think he was Lord of Bear Island.
Yeah,
he was, and then his sister took over after he left.
It would have been Jorah's aunt. It would have been Jorah's sister.
Yeah.
And she survives, but she has like, I forget how many. She had like 3 or 4 daughters.
But it becomes She Bear Island. It's all
right.
Females.
Yeah, it is all females because Maege goes up to find Howland Reed. One of her daughters is with her, an elder daughter, and then she ends up with Stannis before they go to Winterfell.
And she's guarding Asha Greyjoy, correct, which is Yara Greyjoy on the show.
Yes. Yeah. I do have to say, this show is so good at casting kids.
It really is
stunning. I mean, the kid who played Hodor for like a day, he was when he was playing Willis, that kid was amazing. And this little kid who played Lyanna Mormont, she was amazing.
Carrie Ingram, who played Shireen, was amazing.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question? Because it was in the comment section of one of the older shows, and now that it just happened, I have to ask.
Uh-oh.
Annie, why do you say Hodor instead of Hodor? It's like people that say Mario instead of Mario. It's like, I don't get it.
Because I read the books a long time ago, and some that are just stuck in... It's like when you've read words, but you never heard them out loud.
No, that's
and
a great
like,
point.
Even to this day, like, there were so many that I don't... I still say Daenerys. Instead of... I mispronounce it all because I've had the pronunciations that wrong in my head for so many years really hard for me to swap over. And, like, the fact of the matter is, what did I do for years also? I didn't actually do podcasts until this year. I hadn't actually had to say these names out loud until, like, I don't know, now. So, yeah.
So what I'm learning from this is that, much like me and Razor, if you just learn to not read ever and you actually don't have the ability, then you should be fine. So
yes, that's absolutely correct. That's how you learn how to pronounce things properly in Game of Thrones.
Awesome. All right. Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I saw that comment. I have a friend that pronounced like Super Mario World, but it's Mario, and I'm like, dude, what the hell is wrong with you? Why are you saying Mario? Please stop. It's horrifying. Hodor is not as bad. I just was curious. So that's a great answer, though.
And it's why I say Danny instead of, because I can't remember how to say her name off the top of my head properly. So
she
I just keep calling her
names,
Danny.
So
Well, plus George R. R. Martin has a way of just really fucking with your mind by spelling names all kinds of crazy weird.
Oh, you know, I used to actually, like, when I first started writing about Game of Thrones in season one, I would literally chant to myself, A before E-N-E, A before E-N-E, because otherwise I wouldn't spell it right. And Marjorie is another one where it was A-R-A-E, A-R-A-E.
Oh, God.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, God. Her name is so weird.
A before E, except after G, except it's in gay as in Loras is gay. Got it. So that's what they teach in Westeros.
Okay.
So we've talked about Lyanna Mormont. I think we've all been impressed by her talk to the hand moment she had with her maester, her shutting down of Sansa. That was an amazing moment, by the way. My mother was no beauty. She wasn't even a great beauty, but she was a warrior. That was pretty awesome. And her 62 men. So I would dare say that her 62 Bear Island men would wreck the dicks off of Ramsay's 20 good men. I would love to see that.
They outnumbered 3-1, so I would hope so.
Well, you know, Ramsay's 20 good men have taken out a whole entire army of Stannis' men. So,
well, it reminds me, and I don't want to jump in too much, but it reminds me of the scene in 300 whenever Leonidas is like, hey, so what are you, I'm a blacksmith, I'm a painter. Oh, what are we? We're soldiers, blah, blah, abs, right? Like that. Like the Mormonts, like, I can see that being their thing. Like, we fight. That's what we do. We kick ass. And it's like, okay, cool. So, yeah, I'm sure that 62 of them will make a nice difference in the little section of the field they're fighting in. But
if they show if House Mormont shows up in episode 9 in like Spartan gear, I'm gonna just laugh my ass off. With like bears on their shield and no shirts.
Oh man,
in the middle of winter.
Yeah.
In the middle of winter.
You had me at just no shirts.
Oh God. Anyway,
everybody on this show can get it.
That's right. Treat yourself.
Lord.
Okay, so let's jump over to Essos, where the most of the Ironborn fleet has docked at Volantis, and Yara Greyjoy is chasing tail. And apparently she's bi-curious, or she's full-on gay. We don't know.
Bi-furious is what she is.
Bi-furious!
I don't really care. I don't care either.
Honestly, let me predicate this moment by saying I do not care if she's gay or not. But in the books, Asha Greyjoy is not gay. She likes the D, not the P. All right? But in the show, I guess.
Yeah, she does. And she's very open about, like, she wants hers in the bedroom. Like, she is, yeah. She is a very, she's very forward about it, and she's very, like, honest about it. Like, it's actually, I really like it because it's a very, like, you know, most women in Westeros are not, you know, forward like that. And so it's really refreshing to see. But yeah, instead, because it's HBO, they couldn't actually just have a straight woman who was honest about her desires and chasing men. They had to make her into a lesbian. Because HBO.
Yeah, so apparently
for reasons, whatever, unbeknownst to us,
they changed it. But whatever. I don't care.
I want to hear what Isis has to say, because I feel like Isis would have something pretty interesting to add to this.
Isis does have something interesting to add, and I do want to hear it.
I have nothing to add.
Oh, come on, Isis.
I don't believe that for a second.
No, I don't care. I mean, whether she's a lesbian, I didn't read the book, so I didn't know that she got down with the D. I mean, I don't care either way around it. You know, the fact that she is in touch with her sexuality, whether it be a woman or a man, is perfectly fine with me. And still, she's breaking barriers, whether she's chasing a man or she's chasing a woman. So I really don't care about that. I think a lot of people were making, you know, kind of making a big deal about, oh, my God, she's a lesbian. I was just like, okay, well, that just answered that question. Who cares? You know, but at the same time, I was like, I don't care. I think it's just really empowering to see a woman in touch with her own sexuality, and that she's not ashamed of it, whether she likes women or if she was, you know, in the books, I guess she's, you know, looking for dick. But so I just think it's really
the drink.
And it was just so awesome because she was like totally wingmanning it or wingwoming it, whatever. And she was just like, okay, you know, I know that this is probably really tough for my brother, and she's dealing with it with him, like, the only way she knows. But that moment that they looked at each other, it was so emotional. Like, they were really connecting on a level. Like, it kind of made me teary-eyed. It was really kind of a, you know, brother and sister moment that they're like, we're in this together. I got your back. I believe that you have my back. You know, it kind of was like a moment that she kind of forgave him for him basically kind of betraying her when he tried to save her. So I felt like it was a really good, honest moment between, you know, between two real characters, that a brother and sister relationship. But I say, go on, girl. You know, I don't think we've seen a woman more in touch with her sexuality. We've seen it from Marjorie. We've seen it from, what's her name? Crap. I can't believe I've Cersei.
Oprah,
thank
or
you.
Whatever.
Cersei, I feel like, and I would even say Dany for the most part. You know, she's.
I would say Oberyn was pretty in tune with her sexuality because she was with Oberyn, and he was doing whatever he felt like that day. And I agree 100% what you said, Isis, 100%, where you said that she is trying to help Theon cope with this the only way she knows how. Is that the correct way? Clearly not. Like, the only thing Theon actually responded to was his sister making a connection. If you noticed, it was after she touched him. And it just seems like after someone, like, for Theon, who was tortured, and for I don't know how long, the only contact he felt was causing pain, to let someone touch him like that shows that he is, like, really okay with them and is trusting of them. He really trusts and loves his sister. And that moment where she reached out and touched him, that was where she figured out, I can't get – he doesn't have a dick anymore. He doesn't drink. Like he's not the guy that he used to be. I got to figure out how to connect with him. I don't know how to do that yet, but I want him to know that I want to connect with him. That was what was important, I think.
Corey Smith, let me ask you this. Knowing that Daenerys in the books likes to swing both ways when she gets bored, do you think that they're setting us up for a Yara-Dany love connection?
I hope not, by the way. I mean, listen, I don't have any problem with her sexuality either way, you know, either way she goes, but it just seems like one of those things they did, you know, more for like a shock value, you know, HBO, oh, let's make her a lesbian. Like, and I mean, if it does end up being a point, you know, like, okay, well now she can married Danny, I guess. I mean, then sure, but I don't know. It just seemed kind of like, hey, let's, you know, we've done the girl on guy thing. Let's do a girl girl thing.
I don't think it's a marriage thing. I think that, you know, in the as in the books, like we talked about this today in the WIC chat. In the books, Danny sometimes finds herself bored or scared at nighttime, so she finds solace in the embrace of another woman. And so, whether it's her bed warmers, or whatever, she has sex with another woman. And so, I'm just wondering, she hasn't done it on the show yet, and I'm just wondering if that, or she, I guess she did in season one when she was learning how to have sex, but I'm wondering if this is what's going to happen if Yara gets to Meereen and she's all Randy and all cocksure to, you know, whatever you want to call it. But she gets there.
I think if that does happen, that I think the way Yara's uncle was talking about Danny, like, it kind of repulsed the way, you know, he was talking about, like, oh, yeah, I'm going to give her my D.
My
and
big
she's gonna, yeah, and she's going to, you know, basically do what I want her to do and stuff like that. And I think that really kind of disgusted. I don't think the show is going to do something like that unless there's, like, some real connection. I'd like to see them together, but I wouldn't just say, oh, yeah, you know, these two are – I'd said it jokingly, like, 2 weeks ago you know, on the podcast and everything, but I really don't think I don't think the show's going to go there. But if there's a real connection, I don't have any problem with it. Go on, girl, get your swirl on. I don't care. You know, do what you do. You know,
well,
I mean, I'm not going to begrudge somebody.
There's a theory floating out there on a different topic, but staying with the Ironborn, that once the Ironborn fleet does get to Meereen, that Theon will join the Unsullied.
No.
I hate that theory so much.
I don't see
one
that
of the
at
most
all.
It's one of the most just because he has no wedding tackle that he's going to join the Unsullied. I think it's the most ridiculous predictions or theories out there, and I just want to say this on record that no, that will not happen. First of all, his sister wouldn't allow it to happen. Second of all, they made it. She said it. Listen, if you're going to be this way, if you're going to be broken, cut your wrist. But if you're not going to be broken and you're going to do this with me, be Theon Greyjoy. Be a Greyjoy all the way. And you saw the fire come back in his eyes. Like, after he drank that ale and she said, are you going to be with me? The fire came back in his eyes. Like, he was Theon Greyjoy. He came back
all the way. And if I was the sister, if I was Yara, I would have went a step further and said, you know, there's nothing wrong with your mouth. Like, you can still have, like, relations. I mean, you don't have anything down there, but, like, you still have your hands. You still have your mouth. I mean, you know, there's other things you can do. You know, there's life after not having a penis. I mean,
well,
I
in the books, Ramsay makes him do horrible things with his mouth, so let's not go there. Anyway,
God, see, why did you have to do that? Oh,
I'm just telling you, it's just ask Annie. It's horrible.
Yeah,
anyway,
so many things bad.
Let's leave Volantis. Let's go to the Riverlands and let's talk about the Blackfish. We got to see the Blackfish. Another character was brought back on screen who we haven't seen in a long time. And this scene, Corey Smith, let's talk about this for a second. This was almost word for word, scene for scene, straight out of the book. So Lannister army arrives, 8,000 strong, creeps up on the back end of the Frey army's line, breaks right through, where we see the dopey dipshits from House Frey trying to threaten the Blackfish with Edmure Tully, and nothing happens. The Blackfish is like, well, cut his throat. I don't care. It's an empty threat. And then Jaime bitch slaps Black Walder Frey. How did you like that scene?
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely, I mean, especially going into the episode, that was one of the, you know, the scenes I was kind of looking forward to the most, because it seemed like they were going to stick pretty close to the books. And in the books, like you said, it's a really awesome, you know, kind of scene, because you got the Blackfish who just lost all his fucks at the Red Wedding and just does not care. And I think that, you know, he doesn't want to see his nephew Edmure killed, but he knows they're going to kill him anyway, so I'm not going to give up the castle and give them what they want. So, you know, it's not that he wants to see him dead, but it's like, well, if you're going to kill him, but I'm not giving up the castle. So, and then, you know, his banter with Jamie was pretty awesome. You know, the siege is really pretty dull, so, yeah.
Pretty much right out of the book, too. It was pretty much word for word right out of the book.
Yeah, it actually reminded me of the first time Olenna met Tyrion. And she was like, I came here expecting, you know, somebody interesting, and I found a bookkeeper. You know, basically, Blackfish was like, I came here expecting somebody interesting, and you've disappointed me.
Mm. Yep.
And then, but the only thing I disliked about that scene was Bronn riding up like he had been there the whole time.
Yeah. You
know, not that, I mean, I miss Bronn. He's one of my favorite characters on the show. But, I mean, he's just riding alongside Jaime like he's been there since the beginning of the season. There was no, like, oh, hey, you were off doing some super secret mission or whatever. You know, it was just, hey, Bronn's back. And, you know, he's been gone for 7 episodes. So,
yeah.
I wasn't a fan of
that.
Do you feel like that
he just needed a bigger, like, hey, you know, you feel like he's such an important character that it deserved more, like, of a backstory, unlike, you know, the Blackfish, where he's been gone for several seasons, and it was just like, oh, yeah, I think I remember this guy.
Yeah, and, I mean, they could have just been... Yeah, they could have just said, oh, hey, thanks for, you know, getting this army together for us the past couple of weeks. You know, like, it didn't have to be a big, you know, you don't have to tell every second that he's done, but you could have, you know, explained it just a tad. I mean, he literally was just riding alongside Jaime like he had been there the entire season, which was kind of whatever. But, I mean, I forgave it because, you know, his dialogue was awesome. You know, when Jaime starts to try and ply him with a, you know, a castle and a wife, he's like, I don't want to fucking hear it. And
he basically tells Bronn that he's going to be his right-hand man.
Right.
Like, he's going to be part of the Lannister army, and he's going to be, like, his lieutenant. And I love that line. A Lannister always pays his, don't fucking say it.
Yeah.
Don't you say it.
I mean, I think there's a level where Bronn might actually have a sense that Jaime has lost. You know, because the fact of the matter is both Jaime and Cersei have lost. They don't realize they've lost, but Jaime is not there on his own power. He's there because he was commanded to go there. You know, he is now a piece in somebody else's game. You know, and I think there's a level where Bronn probably has a sense from Jaime that things are... this is like when things started to go south with Tyrion.
And Bronn would know that. Not Bran, I'm sorry. Bronn would know that.
Yeah, I have a feeling part of the reason why Bronn told him to shut it is because he knows at this point it's most likely bullshit and he's probably backed the wrong horse again.
But you have to appreciate Bronn in season 6. He's become a more loyal person than he was in season 1. Like, he's sticking with Jaime, like, the fact that he stood beside him and that he...
Well, he's going to ride his horse as far as it takes in the same way he rode Tyrion as far as it takes.
Well, I know, but he gave orders to start dig the trenches and the trebuchets, and then, like, he went and gave orders for the parlay with the Blackfish. Like, that was... And then, you know, it's typical fun Bronn. Like, my money's on the old man. Like, that was... I have, like Corey said, I have missed Bronn all season long, and I kind of wish he'd have been with Jaime in King's Landing this entire time. Like, they could have put him with Jaime as he marched on the Sept, you know? Like, he could have been beside Jaime ahead of the Tyrell army. He could have been there this entire time.
You know why everybody loves Bronn? Because Bronn brings a non-highborn, basically a viewer point of view to the show. So when we watch it, we go, hey, you guys are stupid as hell. And Bronn is in like, hey, you guys are stupid as hell. Like, it's great. Like, he brings a non – I can't remember the character's name in The Simpsons that, like, is always recognizing how absurd the Simpsons universe is. Bronn recognizes how absurd everything about the Lannisters is. And everyone else as well, and he calls them out on it because he knows he's a better fighter than all of them, and it's amazing to have that in the show. You don't want to have too much of it. I get why they pulled him out, but at the same time, I would have loved to have him be like, really, you're going to march an army against a priest? Really? Like, that would have been, like you said, really.
I would have loved to have him make fun of Mace Tyrell, like that, you know, call him a fop or something. That'd have been hilarious. But So we had some great scenes at River Run, and it's only going to get better next week. But we are starting to wind down. Let's talk about Arya and Braavos real quick. I want to talk about her scenes, and we can't really talk about this really quick because we need to talk about this in depth. But there's a couple of theories running around that about Arya's scenes in Braavos, and I want to talk about it with everybody. But let me get my take on it really quick. I am of the mind that the Arya that we saw walking around in Braavos was not actually Arya, that it was actually Jack and Hygar, sexy Jesus, wearing an Arya face, walking around Braavos, testing the waif. That's my theory, and I'm sticking to it until I find out next week. Because we see Arya jumping around like she's in Assassin's Creed, doing parkour off buildings, and for somebody who's been gut stabbed and slashed and had a knife twisted in her gut, she sure has healed up quite nicely and is able to run and fight really well in the next episode. So I just have a feeling, and it's just my theory, and it's a Reddit theory as well. I've seen it several times on Reddit, that Jack and Hygar was testing the waif. Because here's what he said to the waif: don't let her suffer. And it's off for the faceless man to kill somebody with glee. It's not supposed to be with emotion. It's just supposed to be a job. And the waif took glee. Like, she did it with emotion. She took exception with this kill. She twisted the knife. She slashed. She had fun with this kill. And I think I just... And there was too many things. Like, the way she was walking down in the middle of the street with her hands behind her back, and the way that she was really, really arrogant, and she threw, like, two huge bags of money on the table to book passage on a ship. Where did she get all that gold? And she was missing Needle. Where was Needle? She had Needle. She retrieved Needle from the rock. We saw that. Where was Needle? She wasn't wearing Needle. Jack and Hygar would not have Needle with him if he was posing as Arya. So, those are my questions. That's my theory, and I'm sticking to it. I would like to hear your guys' thoughts. Anybody, pipe up.
I thought it was Arya.
Did
you think it was Arya?
I thought it was Arya, too, but I thought she was kind of luring the waif out by going ahead and flashing that money. I mean, you know, if a young girl is throwing out this, you know, money around, first of all, where did she get the money? But the second thing would be, like, you know, if someone is – a young girl saying, hey, I want to book a passage and I want to go to King's Landing and everything, and you're going to take me tomorrow, you know, that kind of thing. Then she was on this, like, basically abandoned bridge area, and she saw this person come up, and it was an older lady, and I don't know if you guys noticed this, but I recognized that face. That face was in the hall of the hall in the House of Black and White, all those faces and stuff. Mm-hmm. We've seen that old lady before. So she would have, I would hope, recognized that lady, that old lady's face, and would have been like, oh, okay, you know, I need to defend myself. But she was all like, you know, like, oh, come here, and everything. So I really feel like that when I first watched it, I felt like she was trying to lure out the waif so she can maybe stage her own killing. If you remember, the lady who played Cersei in the play, you know, told her that she had expressive eyes and that she, you like to play other people, things like that. And I just feel like she was playing a part, you know, that she was kind of luring the waif out, maybe trying to, you know, get the waif to kill her, and then maybe, so that way they think that she's
dead. How do you fake stabs to the gut, though? How do you fake a
stab? She had to take the knife to the gut, in like a wrestler takes a bump. She'd have to take the knife to the gut in order for it to work. You know, I actually buy that theory a lot more than I do razors.
Okay.
Yeah, I honestly just took this as a scene of bad writing. I'm not gonna lie. I just
oh
straight
my God.
Up like
thank
really?
You so much.
No, it like straight awful. Up I took this as a scene of bad writing. Okay, we need to get Arya back to Westeros. We're gonna have her book passage. We're gonna have her act like an asshole, because that's kinda how she acted when she came across the first time. She learned how to behave that way with the first guy when she came over, was to throw money around and act like that. So, you know, like, I just took this as, okay, apparently we need to get Arya to Westeros, so this is gonna happen. Oh, hey, look, she got stabbed.
Okay, it's one of two things, and this is what pisses me off, is that both of them are stupid. Is that A, either Arya walking around. Remember when Varys was like, hey, Tyrion, you walk like a rich person. She was walking just like that. That's not how Arya walks. Arya, the last time we saw her, had holed herself up in this cubbyhole she blew the damn candle out. So, like, she was waiting on the wave to show up so she had Neil ready to protect herself. And then she's strolling around, taking in the sights, looking around, probably eating a funnel cake at some point, just wasting everybody's time.
Which is why it wasn't Arya.
Okay, fine, Razor. If it wasn't Arya, why in the hell did you waste our time with Arya dying? Because when she got stabbed, I was watching it with my girlfriend. She was like, is this a dream? I was like, it better be, because if this is actually Arya, then okay, if it is Arya and she got gut stabbed and then she fell in the water and the wave is like, and she's dead, I leave now forever, and Arya gets away that way, that's stupid as hell. And if it's not Arya, if it's, I don't know, jocking whatever sexy Jesus face is in that, that's dumb. If it's, I don't know how they save this without just being like, and Arya ends up back in Westeros, and everybody happy with that? And it's like, no, we're not. I don't know how they're going to save this. I want Arya to fight the wave. I want a closure with this faceless man thing. And if they're setting it up that it was Arya that got stabbed, then she should probably die, since gut stabbing still would kill you today, let alone back in insert time. I don't know what time this is.
And she fell into the filthy, disgusting
petri dish of water. Or,
you know, people are just pissing and shitting in that water.
Or it's not Arya. And then it's like, okay, fine. Why was he hiding as Arya? Was it a test for the waif? This whole thing with Arya has actually been a test for the waif? What the hell kind of storyline is that? I know regular size Rudy has complaints about this as well. I just think it's been if Arya dies, or she doesn't die, somehow lives through that shit, or if it was the faceless man, what a waste of our time.
Corey Smith, chime in.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with Corey first of his name. There was not a single second of that entire scene that worked for me. And, I mean, before I get to all that, I gotta bring up two points that nobody else has brought up. So, when she's booking passage, the Westerosi captain guy mentions that the Iron Fleet's already in Slaver's Bay. So, that kind of, to me, tilts it towards maybe being a dream or something like that, because, I mean, we clearly saw the Iron Fleet was in Volantis, and Volantis is a pretty decent way from Slaver's Bay, so it's not like they're next door to each other. So
I didn't catch that.
Yeah, he said the Iron Fleet's in Slaver's Bay, so I don't want to go anywhere near those. He said something, but he mentioned that right before she did it. And then as I was rewatching tonight, right before we did the podcast, after she books passage and she starts to walk through that little tunnel to the little bridge or whatever, she passes by a girl that's facing the other direction that's coming towards her.
Other Arya?
And she is wearing Arya's exact outfit from when she sold the oysters, clams, and cockles.
The cat of the canal.
And she even has a little basket that she has under her arm that looks exactly like the basket. So I don't know if that means anything. It was just a coincidence that we're reusing a costume or what. But
I'm sorry, point of order, Corey. It's actually oysters, clams, and cockles, not what you said.
There we go.
Yeah.
Oysters, clams, and cockles.
But I mean, yeah. So back to just none of it worked. I mean, like, okay, yeah. Is it secretly Jacken? I mean, what would be the point in that? If they really are playing that it's Arya, I mean, how dumb does she have to be? I mean, she just gave a giant middle finger to an Assassin's Guild, one that she knows has a basement full of faces. And then she's standing on a bridge by herself. One person walks up to her. She's not immediately on guard. You know what
exactly.
I mean? Like,
exactly.
It's one thing if she's walking through a crowd of people and someone jumps out real quick and boom. But, I mean, she's standing on a bridge. There's nobody around her. Some little old lady starts walking up to her. She's not immediately on guard. I mean, like, did she learn nothing the entire time she was there? So
And what's she going to do when he gets back to Westeros anyway? This is my question. She's booking passes back to Westeros because she has to go back to Westeros. But what is there in Westeros for her?
I mean,
62 more months. That's what.
But yeah, I thought she'd go off with the players. Like, at least that would be a life.
I mean, I think she probably, you know, thinks let's get back to Westeros and see what's going on. And you know, if there's still some people, she clearly is still motivated by her kill list. So, you know, she wants to get back and find out any of those guys still alive so she can, you know, use what she's learned. None of it worked for me. I mean, yeah, she let the girl just walk up to her. She didn't have Needle. I mean, like, if you just, you know, pissed off a bunch of assassins, you'd have every weapon you had with you, you know? You wouldn't leave it.
At the same time, didn't Jon Snow run out to find Benjen without taking his sword, too?
Yeah, but so, I mean, those are people he trusted.
That's true. You got me there.
Yeah, I mean, she knows those people are after her. She knew enough to go get Needle. So then why would she then leave it in her sleeping hole or whatever it was? You know?
Plus, our good friend Bandit would say they're all Starks and they would just run out without their weapons anyway.
That's true.
But I would just like to say this, man. This all just lends credence to my theory that it's Jack and Hygar, that there's been no proof that Arya has amassed two bags full of money, first of all. And that first bag of money that she threw on the table was a bag full of Bravosi coinage. It was the square or the hexagonal cut Bravosi coinage. So that just makes me think that...
It's a trapezoid, you lepton.
Thank you for correcting me on that one. And then she throws a second bag of coinage on it, and then as she's walking away, she quickly and deftly picks up the bag, just like that. Like, you know, I know she's learned some assassin tricks and how to quickly cut purses and take things, but that was in the books. They didn't show it on the show. So she was really, really quick by snatching that purse back up. Secondly, she walks... Corey, first of his name, brought up a great point. She walks through like a rich person through the city.
She walks like somebody, if it was the Waif, for example, she walks like the Waif would have made fun of her walking like.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yes,
she talks
yes.
like the Waif would have made fun of her. Or, I guess, how, are we calling him Jackin now? Really? Not Jockin?
Sexy.
We're going to go
Jackin,
with Jackin.
Jockin.
Jackin. All right, cool.
Yeah,
so Jockin, we'll go with Jockin.
Jockin Hygar.
Jockin.
Don't worry, I'll mispronounce it.
Yeah. Thanks.
Can we just call him Sexy Jesus again?
Yes,
please. Let's just call him Sexy Jesus. That way we're all on the same page.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. I'm with other Corey. Like, seriously, nothing about that whole scene felt real. And it's like, either way, if it was her, if it wasn't, what the hell were you playing at here? So.
Okay, but I'm just going to say this one more time. She walked like a rich person. You said that. Perfect point. She talked like a rich person. She talked like a highborn lady. She had her Westerosi accent back. She had all that money. She didn't have Needle. And then other Corey said, like he said, she let the little old lady walk right up to her, didn't put her guard up. And then, if you guys notice, once the Waif took off her face and started stabbing her, she headbutted her, kicked her, and then expertly rolled over the other side of the bridge into the water. Like, she had the state of mind to escape the death trap of the knife. And then she swam to the steps. So, I mean, you know, instead of being scared and dying, drowning in the canal, she swam to the safety of the steps and out, and then walked among the streets, whatever's wrong with her. And then we see the trailer for the next episode, and she's in a completely different outfit. She has a gray shirt on, and she's jumping from roof to roof. Somebody who's been gutted like a fish is not going to do parkour.
But, okay, here's the thing, though. How can Sexy Jesus be wearing her face if she's still wearing her face?
In the show, they already showed that he had her face.
Yeah, he
put
her face
on. That's right, he did. Okay, no,
that's
all right.
A show thing, from what I understand.
Yes, that is a show thing. I had forgotten. Thank you.
Yeah, they have, like, magical powers in the show, apparently.
Yeah, well, they can put on faces and shrink 3 feet. So it's pretty damn magical. It's about, I guess, that explains, I guess Superman's a faceless man. That explains everything, because the only explanation is that, oh, Superman put on glasses, he's still 6'5 and gigantic. It's like, oh, we didn't notice it. But if he actually
is a faceless man,
that makes a lot more sense, man. So, all right.
You know, the only way that I see it making any sense, even if it's dumb sense, is that if Arya was somehow, she's got something on under her shirt, and she was somehow trying to lure the waif into killing her, or at least making the waif think she killed her so that then she would be free of having
but
to worry
about. But
then
why was she walking so terrified and, like, staring around?
Why get
because
out and
I
walk?
Think because she wanted people to see her. It would be the only
I'm
thing I could think
that
of.
She wanted to be luring. She wanted to lure them to get her to say, what?
Like you're saying, go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm drunk.
Oh, no. Okay. I'm sorry. I'm experiencing delay. I keep on stepping on you guys. Sorry. Anyway, I think she was luring them out to go ahead and try to kill her. You know, and then to try to get away as much as she can with most of her life. But I don't know. I don't know where the story is going. I agree with all of you guys. It really didn't make a whole lot of sense. But I'm hoping that this season has been so good that I am going to give them this leeway to see where this story is going. Because, you know, the last couple of seasons have not been, you know, snappy and great, but the first half, I guess, of this season has been really wonderful. So, and you know, they're able to kind of do their own thing, the creators of the show. And so I'm really interested to see how they're going to play this out. I have to believe that they have a reason for what they did. So we'll just have to play it out. I just don't care about the waif's life. I really don't. I just don't see why Sexy Jesus would want to be testing the waif. She, I mean, for all intents and purposes, she's really a no one on this show. So I can care less about her, you know, her story or why he's testing her. I want to know about Arya. So that's my only thing.
Yeah, you see, the thing is, since I know that they've had periods where they've written really badly, hi, Dorn, that was why I just sort of wrote this off as, okay, this was badly written. That's just all this was. This was just badly written. We want to send Arya back to Westeros, so she's acting like she's going back to Westeros. We need Arya to get stabbed so that she and the waif can have a humongous fight in the next episode, because the next episode is actually entitled No One. You know, like, this is all just set up for next week, and no, it doesn't actually make any sense, but oh well. I mean, seriously, this whole season's been really good, so we had a scene that didn't work. Oh well.
Yeah.
Well, all I know is we've had two transitional episodes in a row in a season full of wish fulfillment. We had, five episodes of five finger slaps to the face, and now we've had two gentle pats to the back, setting us up for episodes 8, 9, and 10 that should be straight up kicks to the gut. The trailer for next episode shows the mountain ripping off Sparrow's head, probably. Cersei chooses violence. Hopefully, Lancel will die horribly. It also shows the battle for River Run. Brienne's going to get some action. Hopefully, she doesn't have to fight Jaime, but we never know. If you saw Annie's trailer breakdown on Winter is Coming, she lightened up a picture where it showed Brienne and Pod in a boat going down the river, and Brienne looking back, horrified. God only knows what she's looking at. And we also, maybe we saw the Tully army marching out of River Run. We could be the Tully army. But there's a lot of things going to happen next episode. Of course, the waif and Arya's conclusion for this season. Hopefully Arya will come out on top. And then we've got episode 9, which is the Battle of the Bastards, you guys. That's going to be an entire episode dedicated to Jon Snow and Ramsay Bolton fighting it out for the King of the North. That's going to be amazing.
That's actually the title of it, is the Battle of the Bastards.
That's actually the title. And then episode 10 will be the Winds of Winter. The title will be called the Winds of Winter. and that will be the finale, and that will be probably when something bad happens, like a wall will probably be crumbling, more than likely, at the end of the season. We don't know, but it sounds like it could happen, and all kinds of bad shit will go down. But listen,
I'm really looking forward to the next couple of episodes, but I'm really interested in seeing Ramsay go down. The Battle of the Bastards, it's going to be intriguing to me. And then not only that, but how Littlefinger gets back into this battle here.
Let me ask you this, and we have run over. We're almost at an hour and a half, but uh-oh. We could go ahead and get to an hour and a half. Let's just round it up. But let me ask you this. A lot of people have been speculating on the letter that Sansa sent. We obviously, she was sending it to Littlefinger. She doesn't trust Jon's judgment. She doesn't trust that Jon has enough strength to take on the Boltons. So she was sending that letter to Littlefinger. Do you think Littlefinger is going to come in time to save her? God damn it, Corey. Do you think he'll reach her in time to save her?
Do you think he gets to use his time travel machine or not? That's the question.
He went to the Greyjoys, so I don't know if he's got it back yet.
That's true. Or will he betray her and take out the winner?
Not come at
all. No. We're 12 years old on this podcast. Or will he
obviously.
Or will he betray her and take out the winner of this battle and declare himself the king of the north?
With what army, though? The army of the Vale?
The Vale.
No.
Army of the Vale.
No. Come on.
He's got, as Annie reminded us at the beginning of the season, he's got a piece of paper from Cersei that says if he... What, liberates Winterfell?
If he takes Winterfell away from the Boltons, he is there. He will become a Warden of the North.
Wow.
Yeah.
That would be crazy. I'd be so mad.
And, you know, like, I really think he's going to come to her aid because he is in love with Sansa, even though it's creepy and nasty and nobody really wants that. The problem is, will Sansa allow him to basically manipulate her into marrying him? Or will she stand against him if he?
What if she betrays? What if she turns the tables on him and betrays him at the end?
Oh God, I hope so. That would be beautiful.
That would finally give her the street cred that everybody's been wanting her to have so badly.
Can I just say that while objectively Littlefinger and Sansa together would be creepy in the universe of the show, that would be a welcome respite from all of the horrible crap that keeps happening. Just an older guy and a younger lady? Whatever. That's nowhere near as...
She's of age, right?
It's, yeah.
You know.
It's nowhere near as bad as literally anything else. So...
Pedofinger. We'll call him Pedofinger instead of Littlefinger.
Yeah, although I'll tell you though, when he was looking at her in season one and she was like 14 years old, like it was creepy. Okay, at least now she is of age.
God damn it. This podcast took a horrible turn.
Sorry. This is what happens when you go an hour and a half next time.
I know, right?
To the time limit.
It's true.
You can
only
talk about Game of Thrones for so long before getting into some really horrible sexual stuff. So, for everybody else, I'm Corey Thone. Thanks for listening.
For the FBI. For the Federal Bureau of Investigations, I'm Razor. All right, guys, listen. We thank you for listening, and we'll be back next week for Episode 608, No One.
You should be.
And we'll see you then. Goodbye, good night, and good luck.
The face will be added to the whole.
You would spill blood in this holy place.
The gods were mine.
Show them what Lannisters are.
And make no mistake, the dead are coming. Dragons do not do well in captivity.
How do you know this?
That's what I do. I drink, and I know things.
They have no idea what's going to happen.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of plan investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.